This is the PMP Industry Insider Podcast. You're hearing from Cole March and Triangle Pest Control's Donnie Shelton and PCO Bookkeepers, PCO M&A Specialist, and TurfBook's Dan Gordon, as well as some of the biggest players in the pest control and lawn care industries. We're talking about what is changing in the industry and taking you straight to the front lines of what the future holds. If you're ready to grow your pest control or lawn care business, you're in the right place.
Hello, everyone. Welcome out to another edition of the PMP Industry Insider Podcast, where we look at what is changing in the industry and we try to take you to the front lines with those that are driving those changes in the industry. Thank you for joining us. My name is Donnie Shelton, owner of Triangle Pest Control, as well as Cole March, a company that offers digital marketing and sales services for the home services industry with a specific focus on pest and lawn. And as always, I have my partner in crime. I shouldn't say crime. I have my buddy, my colleague and esteemed
colleague.
Esteemed colleague, Mr. Dan Gordon. Dan, yes. You want to say hi to everyone?
Hello. How is everybody? Very good. So interesting topic today.
Well, Dan, you know, we get to talk about today. We're going to do another segment where we interview, I think, probably two of our favorite people. What do you think?
Yes, you and
which
I.
Which means we're going to interview each other. No, so we, you know, we said this on an earlier episode, and I couldn't agree more, which is, we have some amazing guests, but you know, we decided that we were going to do a couple of sessions where we talk about these indexes, and of course, Dan, you're the expert. I think most people realize and understand that when it comes to the financials of a pest control company, especially what's happening in the industry as far as like M&A, what's happening in terms of, you know, the financials that really drive the business. I think most people would say, and I'm not. You know, I have to be really careful. Folks that are listening to this, let's all be careful not blow Dan's head up here. But I would say that, Dan, you know quite a bit about this area. This is kind of your wheelhouse. And so we thought we'd dedicate, you have some really cool stuff going on there at PCO. And I want to talk a little bit about, we want to spend this episode talking about this pest index and kind of what that means and how does that play into our industry. And so the topic is, what's your business worth, and then unlocking true value using accurate data analytics. And so, Dan, do you want to just briefly go over kind of what that is, and then we'll get into some questions and kind of start exploring this a little bit later on?
Yeah, so let me frame it. So, obviously, the M&A market has been very hot, and then COVID came, and it seized up, and then it came back with a vengeance once we opened up in the pest control industry. For the most part, is extremely healthy, and we're doing well. But there's a couple of tailwinds that are coming our way. Number one, we don't know how COVID's going to ultimately pan out. We don't know how the economy's ultimately going to pan out.
Whoa. Tailwind, hang on. Now, when you're flying, a tailwind is a good thing. Is this headwind or tailwind?
Sorry, this is headwind.
All right, I'm just making sure here.
All right, well, yeah, no, I blew the credibility, so these are headwinds. So,
all right, headwinds, all right, we're good.
These head, by the way, headwinds are not good. They're challenging. Tailwinds push you, so they are good, right? Okay, so these are headwinds.
Yeah, it's all about ground speed, and when I'm flying into a headwind, that means my flight's going to be a lot longer, and when I'm in a tailwind, I'm happy because it goes faster. Right. So,
the headwinds are, you know, how does COVID end? And what happens to the economy? And yeah, we are essential services, which is terrific. The government essentially gave us that designation, which makes our industry pretty good. But if the economy falls apart, even though we're essential, if people don't have money to spend on our services, that could be a problem for the economy, even though we're essential. Okay, so what does that mean, and why is that important? The reason that that's important is because what we're seeing, and in our M&A practice, we are seeing tremendous activity. People saying, "Well, maybe I should sell my company because they, you know, we were at very high valuations, and then COVID, shut down the government and." you know, and business as well. And then ultimately, it opened back up, and we're back up to very good valuations. And how long does it last? So there's a lot of activity around it.
So it freaks people out. These folks that are kind of sitting on the fence, like COVID happens, like, uh-oh, I better get out, or I better do something here.
So that's one of the headwinds. The other headwind is the election, right? And in my opinion, it doesn't matter who gets in. Something's going to happen with taxes, right? We can't just give away all of this money and not have any repercussions. And so when taxes go up and you sell your company, obviously your net proceeds are going to be less. And you know, it doesn't matter, you know, obviously we're recording this session before the election. By the time it gets published, we'll hopefully know who the winner is.
Oh, boy, you are such an optimistic person. I got a feeling this is going to – do you remember the 2000 election with Bush?
And it was the hanging chads.
I hope you're right.
But assume that the taxes are going to go up. And if it's Biden, he's going to come in and he's saying that he's going to get rid of capital gains, which could literally double your tax burden on sale of a business. Okay. And, you know, who knows if he gets that, maybe he negotiates and gets half of that. Right. So that could be a problem. Trump, you know, he's very, you know, stubborn and he wants what he wants. And so I'm thinking that maybe he probably will have to raise taxes, but it may not come right away. But either way, I think that we have a little bit of a runway that, you know, we can make some maneuvers before taxes go up. And it's not just the M&A, it's like the PPPs, even though the PPPs are not taxable, the expenses are not deductible against them. So the pest control industry is having a terrific year. And so we have to think about these taxes. When does forgiveness happen for PPP? Is it in 2020, which would essentially give you the income in 2020, or is it 2021? You know, so these are some of the things that we think about when we're doing it. And so with that said, the M&A market is extremely hot right now, and we are, you know, we're working on probably 8 or 9 deals right now that are in various stages of completion, and we have inquiries every day. So
can I just pause it there just for 1 second? Because I have a question here, and this is, I don't want to run down a rabbit hole here, but, you know, in 2015, Steritech, I'm sure you remember this deal, right? Steritech in 2015 sold for $425 million, which was essentially 3x revenue.
Yep.
Now, I asked this question because, you know, a lot of PMPs see the valuations that are coming out and, you know, they think, well, there's where the market is, right? And so is that a realistic number for most? I'm not talking about $425 million. I'm talking about the multiple, 3X. Right? 3x. Yeah. Is that realistic for most PMPs?
In 2015, it wasn't. Right. So what happened? That was like that. Oh, my gosh, 3X, well, you know, and it really wasn't. But I'm not saying that all companies are 3X now, but you've got a bunch that have gone off at 3X and that are smaller. So in other words, valuations are coming up. Now, at the same time, I get guys who call me, hey, listen, we're doing $150,000 a year. And I know that Steritech sold in 2015 for 3X. And with inflation, I'm thinking like 4.5 to 5X. You think you can get me that? The answer is no. Right.
Yeah.
So I do get that. But where is the market today? Well, the first thing you have to do is segregate what the different buckets of acquisitions are, right? So a platform acquisition would be a company that wants to go into a new city or territory that doesn't have a presence there. Usually those companies are large, $10 million or more, okay? Mm-hmm. And they go for the highest multiples, and that would be a Steritech. That would be, really large companies. The next bucket would be like a bolt-on where we're in the market, but we want to bring you in and kind of bolt you onto our operation, bring in your management and whatnot. And those bolt-ons don't get as garner as high of a value as the platforms, but they do get a higher value. And the third one is a tuck-in, where you just sell a bunch of accounts and you tuck them into routes of the purchasers. And those get the lowest valuations. And we'll talk about why those three buckets get different valuations in a little while.
So let's talk about that briefly. So, you know, what are, when you look at value, right, and determining, okay, this company is worth X multiple, right, whatever that number is, like, what are the key, you know, performance indicators? What are the key things that really dictate what, you know, what factors on that multiple, right? I mean, what is it that makes that turn?
So there's three KPIs, and then there's a wild card. So the three KPIs are, profitable recurring revenue. So your ratio of recurring to non-recurring, the higher it is, the more desirable you are. The second one is adjusted EBITDA, or I call it cash flow. It's EBITDA stands for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, but it's basically cash flow. And the reason I call it adjusted cash flow is because might not happen in your company, but a lot of our clients tend to put personal expenses through the business or things that,
You know what, Dan, we have a mutual client that we call it Nomics, and I'm not going to say it, but just when you say it.
Yeah,
he knows who he is. And
when you get into the uniforms and you see diapers.
Yes. Or my backyard patio.
That's right. So diapers, uniforms, right? These guys act like babies. Okay, so that's so anyway, you got to add all these things back to get to this adjusted cash flow, right? So that's important. And the reason, so these three buckets go into a model, a forecasted model. It's called discounted cash flow model that a lot of purchasers use to try to model out what the price is. The third factor is growth. How are you growing? Okay. And that's important as well. But if I buy a platform company, my growth, I model in a certain amount of growth because for example, when Orkin bought Western, right, which is a East Coast based company, and that was a long time ago, Western had a stronger brand in certain states than Orkin did, right? So it's easy for Western to grow. So we push, we look at Western's growth, but a tuck-in, we're not going to give you any benefit of growth, because if I'm a big company in Orkin or Terminix or, Rentokil or whatever, and I tuck those, I tuck those accounts in, if I get growth, it's not because of you, it's because of me. I'm already stronger in that market, right? So that's why you get a lower valuation as these companies, come down in revenue. Okay, that's not to say there's a wild card called geography. Maybe a company wants to be in or bolster a certain area, and they're willing to pay up for that. So there's a financial modeling that we do, and then there's a little bit of an art as opposed to a science to push that up if it's a desirable market and whatnot. And that's what kind of goes into it.
So if I had to summarize this, really what you're saying is, what people are buying is predictable cash flow, growing predictable cash flow. That is truly when you look at what dictates value. So if that's, by the way, is that a correct statement to say there?
Yeah. So I have $1,000 and I'm going to invest it. I could put it in the bank and make 1%, right? I could maybe put it into real estate and make 6, 7, 8, 10%, right? Or I could buy a business that maybe kicks off 15% or 20%, and that's how you look at it, right? So, so I'm going to put up $1 million as a buyer, and if I'm looking for a 10% return, then I want $100,000 a year off of that, $1 million investment, and that's the simplest approach. But then you have to add a growth rate, right? So, okay, not only the easiest way to look at it is, let's say we buy a rental property, right? And we pay $1 million for this rental property. And then each year, I get my 10%, my $100,000 in rental payments. And at the end of the year, after I pay all my expenses, I get 10% or 8% or whatever. And the value of the building that I have goes up year after year. So there's a growth rate, right? So mm-hmm. what is that growth rate? And that's that goes into the model. Now, I just said 10%, but there is, it's a more scientific term. It's called WACC, weighted average cost of capital. And so
it's called what again?
WACC. WACC, yeah. WACC, weighted
average. I think you should have a WACC song. But anyway, we'll keep going.
No, the whole argument's whacked. But, anyway, so what we have is this weighted average cost of capital. Now, if I may have cash in the bank, but there's different opportunities that I have to spend that money, right? So what does it cost me to borrow money? Right. So what's my cost to borrow the money? And if I have it in the bank, you know, what's my opportunity cost? And so if I have money that belongs to me, we call that equity. And if I have to borrow money, that's obviously a liability or money that I have to borrow. And so the my cost of capital becomes a blend of what it costs to borrow and what, you know, it costs for me to keep that, to have the highest and best use of that equity, right? And then on top of that, I require a return for the risk that I'm taking. So let's say that my cost of capital to borrow and my equity is 4% or 5%, right? But mm-hmm. I'm going to take this big risk and buy this business. And hopefully, it all works out for me. And I'm going to require 10%. So therefore, my required total rate of return would be, 14 or 15%. My 4% for my cost of capital, and then my 10% required risk. Okay. Now, if you think about that, the lower my required rate of return, the more I can pay for a business. If I have to pay more for this money, the lower the valuations are. That's why valuations are extremely high. One of the reasons is because interest rates are so low. If interest rates mm-hmm. climb, that means that values are going to fall. So it's this big economic model that determines what the what the value of the business is. So that's
let's stop for a moment. And let's peel back the curtain for a second.
Yeah.
Do purchasers, like, let's just say there's a Anti-CMEX, there's a, just these large, do they share the inputs that they use or that they used in their valuation models? I mean, it would be great if Anti-CMEX showed up and said, yep, here's the protocol. Here's how we value. There you go.
Awesome, but of course they're not going to share it with you, right? And then they may have a need to be in a market more than Rentokil or Terminix or whatever, so they may be willing to pay more, or one of the other guys may be willing to pay more based on those other needs. But there's no way that they're going to show that. And so a skilled intermediary, like there's a few of us out there, but a skilled intermediary will be able to try to discern what are those factors that they're using. How do I enter their world and use their model so that I can figure out the most that they're willing to pay for a company? And that's where the skill comes in. And a lot of that comes from accurate data. We need to have accurate data so that we can, create our assumptions. And so that's where our accounting firm, we understand our clients' dollars per hour. We understand how to use these routing softwares, the pest packs, the pest routes, the serve suites. We understand how to get in there, and we actually mine the data so that we can understand our return per hour on our recurring, the first factor, right? We also, because we're accountants, we understand how to maximize that EBITDA or adjusted cash flow because we're in the books and records. We're not surveying you, Mr. Owner. You know, what do you think? We're actually in your books and records and we're getting it. And the third one, which is really interesting, is that growth rate. And the growth rate is, you know, how do we know what the industry is doing? Well, you know, there are different surveys out there, but, you know, last month we started with William Blair, who's an investment banking firm. We started an index. It's a pest index on the growth of the industry. And basically what
this thing, by the way, I mean, this thing is really cool. I have been watching this and I've been seeing, you know, obviously Tim does a great job of, you know, when there's a new data input here, but this is really cool. Can you just spend some time on this? Because this index, I think, is awesome.
The index is really cool because what we do, you know, we work with hundreds of companies all over the country. And so what we did is we took our companies and lined them up, you know, kind of scrubbed them so that nobody knows who, which company is what. And we wiped out a bunch of the companies or eliminated a bunch of companies who had, you know, that there were anomalies like lawn and pest or, you know, too big of an ancillary service, you know, that kind of thing. So it's just a pure pest play. What we're looking for is residential wood destroying, bed bug, commercial, you know, and that's what we want to know. We want to understand what the growth is. And so what we did is we compiled the data. And then what William Blair did is they put it into their, you know, model. And each month we provide them the data and they create the index. What was absolutely amazing to me was this month, we said that year over year, pest control industry residential growth was 10.6%. Okay, that's fine. You've got good data. And Orkin or Rollins just came out with their earnings. And on their earnings call, they said that Rollins residential growth rate for the trailing 12 months was 10.6%. That to me is amazing. Now they have acquisitions involved in that, and you would think that smaller companies can grow. You know, our clients are not billion-dollar companies; they're multi-million-dollar companies. But you would think that that our section of the industry is growing faster than the big guys, right? Because you know, 10% for Rollins is you know hundreds of millions of dollars. 10% for the million-dollar company is $100,000, right? But it shows you how accurate our data is. And what's kind of interesting is you've got these other consultants out there or intermediaries who are graphing, you know, pricing and all of these other factors that are based on their opinions, not based on fact. We have fact. A lot of the pricing that you see or that you hear about is not public information. When Orkin or Rentokil or Terminix buys a company, unless it's big enough where the SEC requires disclosure, they don't disclose the terms of the deals. So anybody who tells you that this deal went off for a certain amount, unless they were integrally involved, they don't know. Okay. We happen to know.
They're speculating at that point, unless they were specifically doing. And even if they were part of the deal, I mean, who would want to work with someone that's like, you know, exposing, hey, this is what I did for this client, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that.
Yeah. So we can't give away names. But the other thing is that, you know, we do a lot of deals, so we have data, but we also do CFO work for some of these big companies. So we get to see these deals, even the deals that we weren't involved in. So we understand where the market is and how, you know, how to price a pest control firm. And, you know, so we've been able to close our deals at the highest valuations in the industry. And some folks will say, well, it's all about you know, an auction. And yeah, there's an auction. We you know, give, you know, the various buyers, you know, a confidential business memorandum that lays out the you know, the companies that we're selling. And so, you know, it becomes an auction, but it becomes horse trading back and forth. But because we have this proprietary data, we're able to maximize the values of these firms. In addition, we have the, you know, the expertise to structure the deals from a tax efficiency perspective. And that's what's driving the market right now, really, is this whole, you know, oh my gosh, does the economy crash and do taxes go up? And you know, we'll see how it all plays out. Kind of interesting, in 2012, taxes got raised too, and people were scared that the market, M&A market, was going to fall apart. And it didn't. It was actually an inflection point where it really took off. But, yeah, you know, we just don't know. But it's really interesting stuff. So we're very excited about this William Blair. You know, each month the index, and you can see it on our website. It's sellmypcobusiness.com. It's on the front page. You can click into it. We also have a guide to pest control mergers and acquisitions, which is our observations of the market and, you know, deals that we've seen go off and, you know, how valuations are done. So I encourage anybody who's listening, you know, to, if you're interested in the valuation of your business, whether you're going to sell your business or not, it really doesn't matter. How do you judge whether you're winning at business? It's the value of your business. That's the scorecard, right? So it's interesting stuff.
So I'm going to take off my Colmarch hat here for a moment and put on my Triangle hat. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure a lot of listeners probably already use or, you know, use PCO services. But, you know, one of the things that I really liked when we first got on with PCO, and we've obviously been, you know, doing business together, Dan, for many, many years, was that you standardized my P&L, right? I mean, you basically said, hey, here's the model. And I know that you do that with almost all of your clients. And I think because of the organization and the way that you've structured it, it's allowed, I mean, this index, right? Now it's almost like, well, we can, now that we've got kind of the standard platform, in this case, it would be a standardized chart of accounts. And I'm not saying everyone does it that way, but it's pretty cool, man, that you guys are able to pull this off and that you're able to look at the market in that way. And if I'm, and I just want to kind of summarize what you just said there, you know, it sounds like to me what you're saying is that since you guys are doing deals and you have this index, you're able to sanitize data. And instead of speculating where the market really is, you're actually using data and actual transactions that have been sanitized to draw the index instead. Is that a good way of saying that?
Yeah. So we've been standardizing a chart of accounts for, you know, almost 20 years. And, you know, others, you know, the associations, other consultants in the industry, they try to, oh, well, you got to use this chart of accounts and we're going to send it out, right? Our chart of accounts has been tried and true. It's what we've developed over the years, also looking at the big boys. And so our chart of account is you know, it's based off of a gross margin method or break-even analysis type of approach. And, you know, anybody who wants it, we're happy to give it out. But, you know, there's others who are giving out, you know, their charts of accounts, but I think that ours is tried and true. And if you think about it, we've got hundreds of clients that make up, I don't know, $650 or more million dollars of revenue, annualized revenue, who use this chart of accounts. So it's pretty standard in the industry, and you know, it's pretty cool stuff. So that's kinda.
So let's say I'm a listener. I'm not necessarily interested in selling my business right now, or, you know, later on it'll obviously be something that I want to do, but it's not on the horizon. What if anything would this pest index, I mean, how would that benefit me? And you know, I mean, what's the point? You know, if it's something that's way far off, why even pay attention?
Well, so obviously, you know, markets heat up and markets cool down, right? And right now we're in a hot market. You know, the stock market is even though it's a little tumultuous, it's pretty hot, right? Alternative assets, real estate, life settlements, things like that, hot market, right? But you want to keep track of business growth, right, and business profitability. because that's going to dictate future values. So you want to understand, are we in a healthy market? Right. So it's funny, if you look at Rollins stock, they're selling for an 8x on revenue. So you go to Rollins and say, hey, listen, I got this company here. Why don't you give me 7 and you make the arbitrage of the other point. There's no way that's happening. Right. But what it's doing is it's allowing you to understand that the industry is healthy. Then you want to know if the economy is healthy, right? And sometimes you have divergence, right? So during the worst of the COVID, when the country was shut down, the industry was doing great, but the economy was really faltering. So those are things that you want to keep an eye on. And just because you don't want to sell your company, maybe you want to sell it 5 or 10 years from now, you should have a plan. The worst time to sell your company or to think about it is when you're having a bad day. Right. Mm-hmm. you want an organized plan. Right. And I definitely get calls like, this last week was horrible. How much can I get for my company?
Yeah. You're all in emotion at that point. Yeah. 100% agree.
Yeah. So that's kind of, what we're thinking about. But
all right. So let's flip to the other side of the spectrum now. Now sure. I'm thinking about selling, or I want to understand what is the true valuation for my company. Can you kind of just talk through the process and explain kind of what that looks like?
Yeah. So, what we do is we those three factors, right? We're looking for recurring, non-recurring, but we could have lots of recurring business, but at very low margins, very low dollars per hour. That's not going to interest anybody, because the most difficult thing when you buy a company is to raise prices because pricing was bad, right? That's a very difficult thing to do. What's easier is to increase route density, right? So maybe I don't have a profitable company because I'm driving everywhere, and my route efficiency is horrible, but my dollars per hour are high. Well, that's a good thing. That's something that we can cure. Pricing, it's more difficult to cure. And so by us being in the books and records, us being in the routing software, we're able to determine whether you have profitable recurring revenue, right? Other consultants in the industry will just ask you, what's your recurring revenue? How many quarterlies do you have? How many, and what's what's the price? Whereas we're able to determine what's profitable. So that's one thing. The next thing is we're able to maximize this EBITDA or after cash flow or after, ultimate cash flow in your business, because we're able to go into that P&L and see where the diapers and other things are and add all of that back, this is a funny story. So I had a client in their charitable donations line was really high. And that's kind of one of these things that you don't ask too much, because you've got people who are, you got people in this industry who are just awesome people, real givers and everything. And so you sometimes see, because of their beliefs, maybe they give away 10% of their business, their revenue to charity and whatnot. So, this one was extremely high, and I had to ask, I clicked into it, and I saw this employee, and his payroll was in the charitable, donations area. And I said to the owner's wife, Debbie, I said, hey, Deb, what is going on? You're miscoding that. Why is this guy showing up in the charity? He should be in direct labor. And she said, that guy's a charity case. So that's how we're categorizing him.
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious.
So anyway, we're in a really good position to be able to do the ad backs and whatnot and come up with that. And then the third factor is that growth. Can look at the industry. The industry growth is not Orkin, Terminix, Rentokil. The industry growth is Orkin, Terminix, Rentokil, Triangle, and every other business, right? So we need to understand what the true industry growth is. And there are a lot of consultants out there who try to, gauge the size of the business and the growth, and it's all interesting stuff. And we're just, we have some information that allows us to do that as well. And I encourage everybody to look at all factors, look at those other studies and whatnot, and make.
No, I would definitely say that you guys, you have a base, with the accounting side of things. I think you've got a really good insight as to what's really happening in terms of the numbers, and I think it's awesome. So, Dan, this has been great, man. Any parting thoughts? If someone, I know for me personally as an owner, I get the idea and then I make a phone call. I'm assuming if folks are kind of wanting to get a value or they're trying to understand what their value is, they could just give you a call.
Give me a call. I'll ask for certain data and I can come up with, an indicator of value. We can also go over the tax ramifications as they exist now and do a couple what if scenarios, if tax laws change and or if, the market, if the economy, tanks. The one thing about our business is we are recession resistant. 2008 and 2009 showed us that. If you're operating in a town where there's one factory and everybody's employed by that factory and they go under, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you're doing, you're in trouble. So those.
Well, I mean, the fact is that we are recession resistant. We're not recession proof, right? I mean, the fact is that you're right. I mean, I think the economy takes a huge hit. We will see. We may not fall as far as other folks, but we will take a hit. I mean, that's that. So one last question and then we'll wrap up here.
Sure.
One of the things that I am curious about is let's just say someone's like, well, I may not be necessarily ready right now, but I have, say, a five-year timeline or a two-year timeline. How soon should someone back up and say, hey, look, I need to start talking to Dan or whomever about prepping for some sort of liquidity event, right? So meaning how do I shine this thing up, before I'm ready to go out to market with it? How soon should someone get in touch with you before
the time is now, if it's any time between 1 and 5 years, so that we can say, hey, and this is a shameless plug for you, hey, we've got to grow that recurring revenue. How do we do that? Well, digital marketing, right? Or some other form of marketing, or maybe making an acquisition. What's kind of interesting is that when some of these bigger companies make an acquisition, so you've got a regional company that makes an acquisition and buys low, it 5x EBITDA or 1x revenue, and then a year later they sell their company for 10x EBITDA or 2x revenue. They've just doubled their company, right? So you don't want to be that guy who sold for 1x and then a year later they flip it for 100% gain. So these are the kinds of things, right? Because you're leaving all the money on the table. But these are the kinds of things that we look at, and so the time is right. Just like anything else in life, you need to have a plan for the day, the month, the quarter, the year, the 5 years, the 10 years. And again, you may not ever want to sell your business. You may want to pass it on to your kids, and that's awesome. But remember, the way that you determine whether you're winning at business, whether you're providing a great place for people to work, upward mobility, all of these things, you've got to keep increasing the value of business, of your business. That's the scorecard. And so the time is any time that you want to, you need to have a long-term plan and what that's going to look like at the end. So
right.
Hope that answered the question.
It did. Dan, this is awesome. To summarize that, the sooner the better, right? Just go ahead and say, look, I think everyone, the fact is, if you're in business, you should always have an exit strategy. And, your timeline may shift and you may move all of that, but here's my strategy. Here's how I'm going to get out and here's how I'm going to maximize it. So I 100% agree. So 1 to 5 years, go ahead and start reaching out. Dan, this has been a great conversation. Very exciting stuff, what you guys are doing with the Pest Index. I think it's going to be a lot of value. Bring a lot of, I mean, for me personally, I look at it every time it comes out you know, look at what we're doing. And we use it as kind of a yardstick, even for Triangle. Now, of course, we're a little bit smaller, and I think, you know, a lot of companies that are on there, but still, like you said, right, it's at least a base to start from. So
great actually, conversation. You're not smaller. They're all different size companies, but, you know, yeah. So that's good stuff. Yeah, good conversation, as always. And we'll see you
I'd say until next time. Yeah, until next time, we'll keep at it. So, all right. Well, that sounds we're going to close it out. Hope everyone enjoys their week, and we'll be back next week with another episode of PMP Industry Insiders. We'll talk to you next time.
Talk to you soon. Bye.